kids, it's time to get some SML podcast all up in that.
Yay, it's working.
The speaker actually did not default to on. Woo.
No, no. That means you're doing it right.
No. I'm not supposed to be correct. I'm supposed to be damn it. I don't do correct.
I love that voice because it makes me think of one of my favorite lines in anything. I miss my mom. I miss video games.
What's that from?
South Park sounds like. Wait, that sounded like a South Park thing. That wasn't Cartman.
No, it was a Teen Girl Squad from Homestar Runner.
Oh, it is a Homestar Runner time.
Boomers.
I missed that. I never quite understood Homestar Runner despite watching it. Like, there were a few clips where I was like, okay, I got this. This makes total sense. And other times I was like, what are people doing? like it's not that it was bad, it's so much that it was just like I don't get the absolute hook behind it, if that makes any sense.
I think it was just a thing designed to be quotable and a little weird. Like, that was most entertainment in the aughts.
in ancient times.
Hey, that was 20 years ago.
It feels like that's for
shut your whore mouth.
We're old guys, just kind of suck it up.
Oh my god, it was 20 years.
Let's see.
We be olded.
Oh, man.
That big was that the one meme that's popping up a lot later was like, what you thought Mario was and what Mario actually was. Oh, man, we're fucking old. Like, yeah, I know. What the fucking remind me?
Homestar Runner was started in 2000, so it is 21 years old.
Oh,
and a
my
bit.
God.
Time just moves on.
Oh, my Lord. 21 years old. Ugh.
I'm going to have to ask you to stop.
Too
I'm
late.
I'm feeling we're old enough, Chris. Cut this shit out.
Wasn't that a thing that
just begun to
it was this. SML on Facebook, right, that posted the, you think this was Mario 20 years ago? This was Mario 20 years ago.
Probably. That was probably Jacob posting something like that.
Yeah. And I was like,
enjoy.
And I was like, dude, this is depressing. This was Mario 10 years ago. And it was Galaxy 2. Galaxy 2 came out 10 years ago.
Yeah, it was still good. Good.
Like the people who are like, Final Fantasy 20 years ago. That was like Super Nintendo and Final Fantasy 6, right? No.
It was 10.
It was a much worse one. Actually, who am I kidding? I liked Final Fantasy 10, but it wasn't 6. That's
the one I'm on right now. I haven't beaten it, and thus I have not beaten any ones that are newer than it.
What do you mean, if the one that you're on? Like, you're playing them in order or something?
I mean, it just, I guess. I mean, it's been 20 years, so I can't really remember my motivation, but.
You just stopped. That's it. It was like, I'll get to it.
I stopped right outside of the ending.
Like, I'm done with Final Fantasy. I've had enough. No more.
That's pretty much me, too. I have a bad habit of not beating games. Like, I get to the final dungeon save point.
You don't say.
No, not the same thing as what you're thinking. I have to get through the games. I just don't finish them. It's different. Though I also don't finish them. But specifically with RPGs is getting to the end of them and stopping. It's almost like I don't want the adventure to end. I don't know how else to describe it.
I only can because of streaming. Streaming forces me to like finish games that I would normally or historically have not finished. So...
Because the viewers are watching, so you kind of have to stick with it.
Yeah, because it's my thing. You know, I play all the way through games, and so I'm not going to like just give up because I, you know, feel unmotivated.
Oh, we're at the last boss. I'm done. Let's move on. What's the next game?
Like, check out the Chris show. He finishes the games. He starts like, oh shit, we don't come across that too often. Let's watch this guy.
He doesn't just play the first level for 20 seconds and then resets it because it wasn't fast enough. That's my gimmick.
You give a game 20 seconds and if it's not good, fuck it, move on.
Oh man, I would burn through so many games.
You wouldn't even get to the title screen of how many games.
Yeah, true.
I actually thought about that as a concept of a show at one point. I just never started doing it, which was like, in order to like get through all my stuff, was like the idea would be to go to the shelf and just like pick a game each week that I've never opened or played before and play like the first like 2 hours of it. Just to be like, hey, here's this old ass game that I spent actual money on. Do I regret the purchase now? Probably. But you can watch me regret it in real time. It's great.
That would have been a good segment if we still had a Patreon.
Yeah.
I have seen people have there's one person I know does a gong show, and basically she'll like she has a whole bunch of indies, and then she'll play it for 15 minutes, and then either the chat can force the gong to hit or it will automatically go off at 15 and she switches to the next game.
So no matter what happens, the game's only getting played for 15 minutes, or
the chat can like use channel points and stuff to add time, but usually when I've watched her do it, a lot of them get passed up at the 5 minute mark, and I'm sitting here going, the fuck is wrong with you people? No patience for anything that isn't AAA.
Well, I mean, that these days, that's kind of the way it goes with a lot of cats. It's like, I want the results now. We have this show. It's 25 episodes. It takes 5 to get the narrative. Fuck that. No one's dead in the first episode. I'm done.
I got 60 seconds. This could have been a TikTok.
Previously on AMC's The Walking Dead. No one's dead yet. Fuck it. Quit.
No one's dead. No one's walking. I'm out.
No one's walking. They're all sitting around living.
This bullshit.
What the hell is this?
This person's driving. This is bullshit.
This isn't the driving dead.
It's the driving alive people.
Never made. Always drives me nuts when like, I see that happen when like, a new show comes out. And you clearly can tell that the person who wrote the show had a whole plan in mind. He wanted to kind of get the characters introduced. He wanted to get you a safe environment. It's like, these are what the characters are like. And then just flip it on his head. People are like, I don't have time for that. Flip it now. Start the show upside down, and then we'll work from there. Like, we get it. You have no fucking patience. Narrative building, not your cup of tea. We get it. Here's a show where every episode involves someone screwing in the back room and maybe a character dying, but you don't know who the fuck they are. You just know they can punch really hard for some reason. Whatever. Who cares? Nothing gives a shit. Like, that's today's TV.
I mean, does sound like my kind of show.
That'll be $12 a month to stream it, please.
Yeah.
No. I'm one of like the rare people, I think, when it comes to TV, where it's like, I don't really, unless it's like an actually narrative specific, I don't need sex in my shows because it's porn for that. And I don't really need like a gratuitous violence if it doesn't fit the narrative either. Like, I don't need to freaking watch Rotten.com on like on the air or whatever. So
I need gratuitous violence. I'm here for the teeth, hair, and eyeballs everywhere.
I honestly, I have the viewing habits of like a 12-year-old like Christian kid. I just want to watch like totally innocuous stuff where nobody gets hurt and everybody has a good time.
That's a good way to be, I think. You know, to me, that's wholesome. That's appreciative. That's appreciated and wholesome.
I got time for wholesome shit. I need to see somebody's entrails. if there's not blood splatter in the cold open, I'm done.
are you like on the Saw train? Is what that is?
I watched a couple of those just because I wanted to see what people were going on about. I didn't think they were that good.
I bet.
They weren't gory enough for me, Purnell.
That's the most disturbing damn thing. Like, I don't want to watch them. And this is where it's like, it's not that I don't.
Enough.
It's like, it's not that I don't get them so much as I'm just like, you know, I don't really want it. Like, can Purnell handle it? Yeah. But do I want it? Not really. No. There's no real point.
In my defense, though, I do tend to prefer, like, psychological horror and thriller. So, like, gross is fun. Don't get me wrong.
But you'd rather get, like, the mind fuck.
I like the gross that's going to fuck my mind. There needs to be a happy mix of it.
Yikes, yes, like me. I guess it depends on, like, if it fits the narrative, I can work with it. But a lot of times people are just like, well, we didn't need this to be gross, but you know what? People want entrails. So rather than just have the victim be dead on the ground, we got to watch the killer play hopscotch with the guy's guts.
Just make sure there's not a nipple showing. Watch out, guys.
Oh, God. Yeah,
get all the entrails out, but cover up the nipple.
Yeah.
Dead girl breasts, can't have those. Dead girl guts all over the place. The killer paints with them. It's his niche. It's Rocky. You know, just he
Sunday
loved that
on
shit.
CBS.
Entrail part, entrail artist. This is a new shtick.
Do not like encourage me.
She's like, I already wrote that. I already wrote that show. What are you talking about?
I already painted that. Don't encourage me. Oh,
God. don't test her. Don't test her. She's already got the door in her house. It was like, this never. Me can't do it. Can't do it. Like,
speaking of shows, we should probably do one.
Oh yeah,
are we doing unless a show?
Cole's like, is it gory? If it's not gory, me no wanty.
Where's the entrails?
I don't know. Well, I don't even know where the beginning of this episode is. Really, I
segue from entrails. In. Or maybe, take back my
maybe
sub.
maybe it's just gonna come in from the music and I'll just be like, hey, it's working, all right. And then everyone starts talking and then we just don't have a beginning.
There you go.
And we got an end. Look at that shit.
No beginning, no end.
Beginning, no ending. It's just an infinite loop of this god-awful show. Every single game is, all right, next game to talk about. Which is the final game? Next game to talk about.
Sometimes it does feel that way.
Can we just talk about unrelated games?
So I guess when Stay Tuned makes a comeback, that's how it's going to play out, huh? Like, just... get beamed into the SML stage. Like, well, next game. We're not even talking about it. We're just going to talk about the same games again. Someone else is going to talk about it. And then the previous person is going to talk about it, but they forgot what they were talking about. So they got to say it again. Oh, no. Oh, that gun has no bullets. I'm sorry. What are you trying to do?
Like Speed saying Genesis Noir. We did that last episode.
He ain't paying attention.
You liked that one, didn't you?
Mm-hmm. It's definitely abstract and odd, but I didn't hate it.
Was it Genesis a unique experience?
What? Yes.
When is it not? Don't answer that. Oh, boy.
Oh, yeah, I guess everyone's done talking now that I brought attention to the fact that we're doing a show.
Yeah.
That's kind of how that works.
Like, we're doing a show. Quick. Shh.
Let's just all check your pie holes.
Go ahead, Joe. Entertain us. Shh, Joe. Go ahead. Talk, Joe. Fuck, for everyone.
As wish.
I don't know what to say.
Segway,
Segway. Should we dive into reviews? Should we just get to this?
Let's dip our toes into the mush.
Into the mush?
Wait, am I going first?
Yes.
I don't know. Ah, fuck. Yeah. Now let somebody else go first.
No, too bad. Started in this.
Remember how I messaged everyone a list of all the games in the order that we're doing them in?
I forgot I was going first. Now I don't want to push and be like, yeah, let's get this done. Because now we can wait.
Too bad. I'm on the push train now. Thanks, Cole. Like, convince me.
This is the first time in like 15 hours that I'm not working. So I'm good either way.
Chris is like, as long as I'm not moving a fucking piano right now.
You do get I'm not even moving. In there, right? You're not like getting transported to the next location to immediately move another piano, right? Huh? It's like, okay, we move this one. We can freaking breathe for an hour, either in transit to the next stop or just because we don't have a freaking order yet.
Today was all transit.
Oh,
it was,
man.
There's, you know, pianos moved, but also I went to like the Mexican border. Which is like 4 hours away.
I gotta say, the other thing that throws me off too is the fact that, like, I'm amazed that there are so many piano purchasers out there still. Like,
oh, yeah.
I'm not even gonna lie. If I had the place for one, I've seen so many on our local Facebook marketplace for like $100-$125.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm like, I would fucking buy one in a heartbeat. I have nowhere to put it.
You see, even those people hire the movers, you know? So it's like.
Hell no, we got a hand truck and a husband. They can go get it.
And a husband. I purchased one husband.
It's a full-size piano. I don't think a hand truck's going to help you that much.
No, it's
even with a full size husband.
Well, damn, he's a half size husband too.
Ooh,
I mean, he's tall, but he's scrawny, so he's only half. So that's a problem.
But then I've also got the, like, you know, the dizzies and achies and all that other stuff because I got my got vaccinated yesterday.
No, you got your Fauci ouchie.
Congratulations,
Fauci ouchie. I have not heard that.
It actually, the shot itself did not hurt.
No, it doesn't.
It was a little baby needle.
It's when it fucks you up about 36 hours after the fact.
Yeah,
that's when it got me. Because I was like, I'm doing great. I don't know why everybody's complaining. I'm doing fine. I'm not even tired this time around. And then about 36 hour mark, I was like, wow, my hips kind of hurt a little bit. Wow. I'm kind of tired.
And I don't want them.
And then it was like, by the 38 hour mark, I was like, I'm freezing and everything hurts and I'm going to murder everybody around me. And so I laid down on the couch and I slept for about 4 hours. And then I woke up and I felt fine. And I was back to nothing's wrong with me all over again.
Oh, I hope that happens with me.
I just slept that shit off.
Yeah, you got a very abbreviated version of the symptoms of the side effects. Really,
to be fair, though, like, I have an overactive immune system. That's whole point of, like, the reason I needed the shot is because I take medication to suppress my immune system. Mm-hmm. So because I was getting the vaccine, they took me off that medication. So my immune system is just like, Hyperforce, go!
That's a good immune system if it's Hyperforce going it.
Yeah, I know. And so they, like, without my normal medicine to... The problem is that it's causing flares in other ways. So, like, my joints are swelled up and I can't stand up for very long. Normal arthritis shit. But, you know, as far as the vaccine goes, kicked its ass in a hurry.
Yeah.
So now, and I think I got 2 more weeks and then I can start my regular medicine back again.
Yay.
Sweet.
Yeah.
What, the vaccine was why you couldn't take your medicine?
Yeah, whenever I take antibiotics or I take a vaccination, I have to stop my prescription beforehand. Yeah.
Man.
Because the whole point of the medication is that it kills my immune system, so it can't do anything.
Mm-hmm. Well, on the positive, at least, well, I guess technically you still have to wait for the second half of the vaccine, too. So
I already, this was my second half. I had the first one last month.
Oh.
Yeah, I'm already good. In 2 weeks, I am considered fully vaccinated.
Yay!
Yeah.
What's your mutant days. Superpower?
I don't have one. I'm just cranky.
That's nothing new.
Yeah, I was like, I'm just a bitch. Nothing else happened.
Are you done being cranky, and are you ready to talk about video games?
Yeah.
Even though you have to go first?
Yeah.
Why do you not want to go first tonight?
Because I have anxiety and I'll never like going first.
You go first like every other episode.
It's just that
doesn't everyone on this show have anxiety? What are you talking about?
Seriously, we all have anxiety.
A bucket to puke in under the desk. You know that?
We are all anxious, depressed, and old.
Okay, but I'm not.
We are all on medication.
I'm just overwhelmingly anxious and I think the world is going to implode around me, but I'm cheerful about it.
I'm still amazed at this stage in the game, you still got the puke bucket.
Yeah, that puke bucket's a permanent installment in my life.
One day like, we'll use it on the show.
We've done like 700 episodes. This is the episode. This is the one I don't feel so comfortable.
I'm waiting for it. Just her talking. So yeah, anyway, you go up the steps and there's an enemy over there.
Like, I didn't know the demons puked in that game.
Oh, there's
now you're gonna make her do it. Don't tempt fate, man.
No, it takes a lot to actually make me puke, but
I guess
that's a good acting job.
That's why I keep the drop hat, but as far as sound and stuff go, it doesn't get me. But I'm a loud one too, so if it happens, you will hear it.
You're a loud puker. Nice.
Yeah, I am.
Do it. Do it.
I'm not gonna do it on command.
Don't you bring it there. Well,
what's the fun if you can't do it on command?
I'm a sympathetic puker. I don't want
bulimia.
That.
I got enough problems without having an eating disorder.
I'm an unsympathetic puker.
I'm doing it to spite you, bitch ass. Mm-hmm.
If nobody's puking right now, I might as well.
Yeah, fuck it. You're not, might as well.
Hey, are you not hurling right now? Don't mind if I do.
I threw up because of Ashley's driving the other day.
Yeah, oh, wow. I get car sick.
No, it wasn't normal car sickness. It was like Ashley jerking and driving and like tapping the gas and tapping the brake and just her driving. I got sick. We went to GameStop and I'm like, hold on a minute. And I walked back by some trucks and I just let it rip. And then I went back to the car and we ate Popeyes.
Last week, David's dad took us to town we got a new truck. And when we were riding with him, he makes me sick every time. And like, we were maybe 3 miles from the house. And I'm like trying to stealthily roll down my window. Cause if I put my fingers out in the cold air, it'll help. And I'm like just trying to like stealthily do it so he doesn't get offended that he's making me sick, because I've rode with him before and he will do that shit on purpose. If he knows he's getting me with it, he will do it on purpose.
Why would you make someone sick on purpose?
My father-in-law and I have a very strained relationship.
Clearly, because honestly, if someone was going to have the trouble of making me sick, I'm going to make sure it's the most inconvenient place. So I'm going to wreck that damn car big time. Don't screw with me. Don't screw with my internal fortitude.
He one time kept saying, huh, and ignoring me when I asked him a question. And he was like, he just goes, sorry, your voice is the same pitch as the ringing in my ears.
Like, damn. Now that's antagonistic.
Cruel motherfucker.
Wow.
Cold-blooded.
That's okay.
Dun dun dun! She's like, you know what else has a ringing in your ear? Putting these a ringing in your ear? That game. The game you got to review.
Yeah, there's speaking of games, ringing. We got to review. Should we get to these?
Yes.
Oh yeah.
Are you sure, Cole?
Yeah, I'm good.
Or do you want to delay more by talking about vomiting?
She's like, well
I started off with intro.
Maybe both.
Then I went to the vomiting, but it's okay because now my stomach medicine has had time to kick in, so I'm good.
It kicked in because the meds kicked in, and now she can talk without keeping to me. Keep bucking under the table. Don't get your ass sick all over the floor. It's time to do reviews, and the first person up is Cole. Do your review today. I want to hear it.
I wasn't going to interrupt that. First game to talk about. First game to talk about tonight is called Immortals Phoenix Rising, developed by Ubisoft Quebec, published by Ubisoft, released December 3rd on Xbox One, Series X and S, PS4, PS5, Switch, PC, and Stadia for $59.99. The Gold Edition with the Season Pass is available for $99.99. Immortals Phoenix Rising brings grand mythological adventure to life. Play as Phoenix on a quest to save the Greek gods from a dark curse. Wield the powers of the gods to battle powerful mythological beasts in the air or on the ground and solve ancient puzzles. The fate of the world is at stake. You are the gods' last hope. Cole, tell us about your time with Immortals Phoenix Rising.
We spend a lot of time with games that rely on mythology for their storytelling. And every one of them holds the gods to like this high esteem and just really reveres the characters. And Immortals Phoenix Rising is like, what if they were all bumbling idiots, though? And I love every moment of it. I love that the whole point of the story is that Phoenix's story is being told as an oral story being passed around between Prometheus and Zeus. And so their interactions you know, pepper in throughout the game. You can just be cruising along the open world and get little snippets of their dialogue. And it's always a nice comedic break when you're not expecting it. I will say that, it seems like some of their dialogue is tied to certain areas. So you can be progressing through the game, and they obviously, with it being open world, there's no set path, and you may find yourself climbing up a hillside and then get to the top, and then the dialogue skip through a couple different options because it's trying to catch up because you didn't go the path that was expecting to trigger those dialogue options. And so it's trying to keep up with you. So the audio dialogue will actually kind of skip itself a little bit, and you can kind of lose it if you don't have subtitles on and are reading those as you go along. That's just one of those. It happens. I've seen every open world game do that because they do have to just tie the dialogue to, oh, they're in this area. This is the dialogue that should be spoken. But moving, particularly, you're supposed to move like up these different hills and stuff. And there are paths and they're very obvious, but it's an open world and fucking climb a mountain. Who the fuck's going to walk up steps when you can climb a goddamn mountain? me. there are several different difficulties that you can choose from. Hallelujah. That is wonderful. In particular, there is the story difficulty as well as an easy and then, of course, normal and the harder ones. Who the fuck plays on those? I don't know why you want to torture yourself when you can play on the easier ones and just enjoy the story. Although I will say, if you are playing on story difficulty, at times it may feel like there's not enough activity in the world for you. And I even bumped mine up from story to easy because I was going such large stretches without like kicking into any action. Which is both a blessing and a curse. I was on a time crunch and I didn't want to run into a battle every time I took three steps, but I also wanted just a little more for the sake of earning XP and stuff. So I did bump it up for myself, which is rare. I don't normally do that. But if you are planning to play it on story, you're just going to spend a lot of time running from point to point. I will say, I already mentioned how the game has like this wonderful like sense of humor going on between the characters. It doesn't take itself too seriously, and I really, really appreciate that because on one hand, I was fully expecting an Assassin's Creed meets Zelda type of game where it was going to be like, you have to have this upgrade to do this, and you have to have that upgrade to do that. You can't just explore. You have to, everything's planned out and you need to progress this before you can progress through that. Immortals is surprisingly really forgiving about how you approach it. If you want to dive into dungeons the moment you see them, go for it. You may not get everything in it, but it'll still let you through it. And almost all of them that I have encountered, and this is a dense ass game. So take what I have encountered as a grain of salt. But all the ones that I have encountered, you could pretty much just do them with the basic skill set that you start off with without any upgrades. Now, that won't let you get all the chests and stuff, but you could at least beat the dungeon just by using the basics of what you get. That's not to say that there's no reason to upgrade, though. If you want to explore more, if you do want to go and get the chests and get the different armor sets and things like that, they can really help your experience, especially if you are playing on a higher difficulty. But they can also just make things easier for you. For example, some armor will give you additional stamina. And seeing as I like to climb up every fucking mountain I come across, that was vital. I was secretly hoping when I put it on story mode that the stamina was just going to go the fuck away, because I hate stamina, especially in open world games. And the fact that you use it when you're swimming and when you're just running, I get it. I understand it as a mechanic, but I was really hoping to turn that shit off. But again, I was able to upgrade it quickly. I was able to find armor that upgraded it, and eventually it was kind of moot. I was getting to places before I was running out of stamina, so I wasn't too mad about it. Plus, you can also craft potions and stuff. But yeah, I was having a really good time. I knew I was going to enjoy the game to an extent because I love Assassin's Creed, but I haven't played Assassin's Creed because I've missed, like, we own them. I just don't have time to play the last four.
And, yeah, they're big.
And I was like, I don't have the time sink for that anymore. And so I feel like I've kind of fell off of the franchise because I don't have the time to commit to it. Whereas with Immortals, I was like, it's far more forgiving, at least on the easier difficulties, if I put in 4 hours here, leave it alone for a little while. And because it's a new IP, I don't feel like I've missed anything. I don't feel it. It feels safer to jump into. I would also like to point out that it was a really good transition game for number two, who, while she enjoyed Breath of the Wild, has been eyeballing Assassin's Creed, and she is on the autism spectrum, however. And even though she's 13, Assassin's Creed is just a little out of her reach still, as far as the game goes. Whereas Immortals was like a perfect fit, and she was able to dive into it and understand understand the upgrade processes and enjoy the story without feeling the pressure of the realism of Assassin's Creed.
That's awesome.
And so I was really happy with that. And even number three is like, maybe I can try. So it's nice to see that there's that open world RPG element, but it's not locked away as something that only older, more established gamers can enjoy. Even younger or less skillful players can enjoy it as well.
So tell us a bit about some of the DLC. I know the Gold Edition comes with the Season Pass. The Season Pass is available by itself. I believe it's $40.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us about some of the DLC.
Can I be entirely honest?
You didn't have enough time to get there because the game is so friggin' big?
Partially. But also, the DLC is peppered into the original areas. And so, which is nice. But it's also an instance of I would try to enter into some of those dungeons or whatever. And those were the few times where it would be like, you don't have enough to complete this. So like I could run it, but I wouldn't be able to get everything in it. So those are there and unlocked from the start when you are beginning it anew, which is, again, nice, but it does have its problems. If you're like me and just like, I'm going to murder everything, and then you get shit handed to you from a dragon. Thank goodness the saves are forgiving. There's manual saves. There's auto saves. The first time I died, I was like, oh, holy shit, I'm fucked because I haven't saved in a while. And it was like, no, there were auto saves and I just didn't see them happening.
Yeah, it seems like Ubisoft is pretty good with auto saves.
Yeah, and it was like, it just started me right back where I was because I had I fell into a gorge. I ran out of stamina while I was flying. And just down I went. Just like Icarus, too close to the sun. But it is such a dense game that, you know, I, on one hand, that's why I was anxious about reviewing, because I was like, I've played so much of it and I still feel like I've only scratched the surface.
Oh, that's the beauty of games like this, is that they're just so goddamn big and there's just so much to do with them.
One of the things that I'm most excited about, though, is that there's more of it for me.
Yeah.
Yeah, like I enjoyed it so much, and I, even with as much time as I have put into it, I'm still just like, fuck, I can't wait to go play a little bit more, though.
And you mentioned it, but I really do want to touch again on how much I loved the style, the visuals, and the humor of this game. It felt
beautiful.
It felt like Assassin's Creed and Legend of Zelda mixed together with Disney's Hercules.
Yeah. I did get the...
With less music.
The Hercules element was kind of in the back of my head, too. I was like, this is... It's that kind of humor. Like, it just does not apologize for being goofy. And I'm not mad about it at all.
Yeah, I love it. So, overall, $60 on Immortals Phoenix Rising. What are you thinking?
I'm going to give it a buy it. I am really surprised. Like, I expected to like it. I didn't expect to love it, but I do.
How about the DLC? Is it worth investing in that? Is it worth checking out the Gold Edition?
I will say, if you are currently looking to buy the game at all, at the time of this being recorded, the Gold Edition is on sale for $50, and you should just buy it.
Is it? I thought that was last week.
No, I don't know. It's part of the spring sale, so whenever that goes, yeah, it is $50 at this time, so do it.
So, chop chop, get on it. And, cool. All right, moving on. Next game to talk about is called Kaze and the Wild Masks, developed by Pixel Hive Studio, published by Sedesco, released March 26th on Xbox One, Switch, and PS4 for $29.99, PC for $19.99. Go on a journey as Kaze in this 90s classics-inspired platformer. When the Crystal Islands get cursed, Kaze needs to save her friend Hogo while facing enraged living vegetables. Find the Wild Masks to unleash powers of legendary guardians and master land, sky, and sea. Pernell, tell us about Kaze and the Wild Masks.
I'm kind of spoiling a review right here, but Kaze and the Wild Mask is probably one of the best surprises I've come across this year so far. Like, I requested this game to review because at the surface, the game reminded me of Tiny Toon's Buster's Hidden Treasure, which is an old, old game on the Genesis. And it only reminded me of it because it's such a good game, right? But it mainly only reminded me of it because the character's a rabbit. And she has kind of like a nice, like the way her ears work and her way she platforms and stuff like that. Like she hangs from her ears and stuff like, hey, Buster, so give me this game. And then what I ended up getting was a game that actually feels a lot more like Donkey Kong Country. Only, I'm not going to say only because I did like Donkey Kong Country. And I mean this in the best way possible. Like it plays like someone said, hey, what if you want a Donkey Kong Country, but you only control one monkey and this person can do everything that all the other monkeys can do. So you don't need to be Dixie or Diddy or Donkey. You're Kaze and you just do all the shit. Well, you kind of get this game and it is a treat. The idea behind it is like, I have no idea why stuff happens despite watching the intro cinema, but ultimately your world is plagued by evil vegetable things and you have to trek across a bunch of stages to restore order. And what ends up happening is every stage is broken up into like a series of like, let's say like seven or eight worlds or stages or so. And what ends up happening is you go into the levels and you complete them. And I'll talk about the actual levels right now rather than going to the generic flow of the game. So when you go into a stage, you control Kaze, of course, and her abilities are as such. She has a normal run. She can dive bomb or dive ground pound like, you know, you do in platformers. She has a ear helicopter spin. So if you jump in the air and hit the helicopter spin button, you kind of glide down to safety. And she has like a kind of rabbit ear spin. So it's kind of like similar to Donkey Kong's role in Donkey Kong Country. It gives you a little bit of forward momentum and it does damage to enemies if you collide with them. As you're playing through levels, the goal is there's a multitude of goals in the stages. You can just get to the end of the level. But in addition to that, there's also collecting the letters Kaze Kong to complete an emblem. There are two hidden, like, bonus stages hidden on each stage where you want to complete them if you can find them. And by doing so, you unlock medallion halves. Get both stages complete, get a full medallion. In addition to that, there's also little red gems hidden throughout the stages. If you collect over 100, you get a medallion for that. And in addition to that, if you get through a stage without taking a hit, you also get an award for doing that. And once you beat a level the first time, you can come back and do a time challenge. Or you beat the level within a certain window of time to get a gold, silver, or bronze medal. Each level has a lot of replayability. Now, funny thing is, early on in the game, I was being a cocky bastard. It's like, this is easy as shit. Like, I'm just going to just knock them all out, get all the medallions and all the stuff. And it was easy. And then I got to the second world. And while I'm not going to sit here and say that the game kicked my ass or anything, it's definitely manageable, especially because there's no live system in the game. That doesn't mean it's easy. You're going to work for some of this stuff. It may be one thing to say I got through all the levels without really breaking too much of a sweat, but if you want to actually try to get all the stuff, especially the time challenges, screw that. You're going to work for this shit. Now, and this isn't all the stuff I mentioned before. There's also the other aspect of the title. It's not just about Kaze. It's also about a bunch of masks that are apparently, you know, rambunctious or something. I don't know what the word is. And what those are four different animal masks that you can find in the game. Now, they're not actually power-ups or anything. They're more like stage modifiers or things that change the gameplay flow. So, for example, you'll come across a shark mask. Now, the shark mask allows Kaze to swim. That doesn't mean it's a cool power-up you find and now you can explore hidden water environments. No, that means if it shows up, that level involves swimming, and without the mask, you can't swim, so you can't do the freaking stage. So don't think of it as like, oh, I found the shark mask, so now I can find some secret hidden water grottos. Like, no. You found the shark mask, which means this is a swimming stage. Work with it. And normally I'm that guy that's like, I like power-ups. I want the abilities to let me do crazy things outside of like a gameplay mechanic or a loop or something. But it works fine in this game because the gameplay itself is so solid that I don't need extra random stuff to find. I'm happy with what I'm already getting. I mean, looking for the two bonus gates is kind of enough searching in and of itself on each level. Aside from that, I like the tightness of having to get through every stage. And there's like hidden bonus levels in the game. I don't want to call them hidden, more like you get enough collectibles and you can unlock the bonus stages. But the bonus stages are actually even kind of cool. Like early on, they already hit me with a really great one where you start the level off with a bunch of platforms and they all drop out and you have to get through the entire stage without being able to see the floor. Like, I like that. I like it a lot, actually.
Interesting.
It's really cool. Like, I want to find. I haven't gotten all the bonus levels, mind you. But I'm hoping there's more like that because you can't just give me one of those and then take it away from me. That's just wrong. But the bosses at the end of every level, the typical, you know, bop them three times and they go down scenario. I don't really place much stock in that when it comes to platformers because it's almost sometimes it's like they're just like inserted at this point to be like, hey, we need something to cap off the stage. Here's a bop three thing. Like, you know, I don't care. Not to say that the boss battles are boring or anything. It's just that I'm that guy that's kind of like, stop making me hit him three times. Come on, you can do better than that. Give him a hit point bar. Give him 10 hits. I don't care. Make me work for this shit. But it's still fun. Still enjoyable. All in all, this game is, like I said at the beginning of the review, it was a massive surprise for me. People that like platformers should play this shit. Like, it's really good. I have no complaints about it. Like, none. Nothing. Like, fine, shit. but I guess this isn't really a complaint. This is just a Purnell being a lame ass, in that the music is also kind of like jungly, so I don't really get pumped for it. But it's also not bad music. It's just, I'm not going to play it in my car. But it fits the game quite well. And I don't turn the music down while I'm playing. And I turn it up because it still works. It's serviceable for the game. And I like it. So that's the biggest complaint I could come up with. I think you got gravy on your hands here.
Then $30 on it, $20 on PC. What do you think of that? And what do you think of the price disparity? I know Sodesco is one of the publishers that does it where it's like $10 more on console. I am annoyed by it, but I don't know the decisions that go into pricing like that. So
I think it goes down a certain number of roads. One, until this episode and our discussion, I didn't know there was a discount, a cheaper version on PC. So I was prepared to pay $30 for it on console. And I do think it's worth $30. It's a good game. With that said, though, we also live in an age of sales. So if someone's listening to this and they're like, fuck that $10 difference, wait for it to go on sale then. I mean, true. You're not required to buy it at launch. But if you do buy it at launch, I don't think you're wasting any money. I think it's a quality time for $20, $30. I'm still considering buying the physical version of it on Switch just to say I have it there too. But nice. As you already know from my Facebook, I'm like, fight it. Fight the urge to spend your money. But
do it.
If I'm being frivolous and fun, is worth that cat. Don't you be that
do
guy.
It.
Nope. Fails. I'm better at this now. You can't hit me. God damn it. I put up a wall. But this is really worth the scratch, though. Like, this is a really good game. Highly recommend it.
Cool. Sounds good. All right. Next up is C14 Dating, developed by Winter Wolves, published by Ranelika Games, released March 30th on PS4 and PS5, March 31st on Xbox One and Series X and S, April 2nd on the Switch for $19.99. You play as Melissa Flores, a third-year anthropology student participating in a summer archaeological internship. The field school takes place in Belgium, over 5,000 miles away from your native California. You'll be staying in unfamiliar country for 2 months. It can be nerve-wracking, but you couldn't pass up such a learning opportunity. Maybe you'll dig up some bones or even unearth tools that were manufactured by early humans. You might also forge friendships and find romance during your stay. Chris, I'm guessing the romance is the magic word there. What is C14 dating?
Okay, so they neglected to mention the third option where you can just like spend all your time on the internet and just let the game pass you by.
Really?
Yeah, pretty much.
Nice.
Okay, so C14 Dating is, by the way, already like a rock pun or a what would you call an archaeology pun? Because carbon-14 dating is how we measure the age of fossils and such. So C14 Dating. Well, if you're sighing like that, then you're not gonna. You're not going to be very impressed with this.
It's going to be a rough one for you.
It's going to be a rough one. Yeah. Okay.
Is it,
so, yes.
Is it a rocky road?
Oh, there you go. You got it.
I don't want you to, you know, have a bone to pick with me, so I'll stop.
Okay. It's basically at its core, it is a visual novel focused on basically, yeah, characters and kind of building up relationships, friendships, and, you know, romance, as it says. You do play as Melissa Flores, which is fun to me because that's the name of somebody I used to know in real life, which is so I was like, oh, OK, well, and yeah, she is in Belgium. She's a third year university student who is, joining an archaeological dig and stuff like that. And like, so it's her and there's a cast of characters. It's probably about 10 total, of everybody that you meet. There's, a few classmates, that keep cropping up. And those are the ones that you kind of build relationships with. I believe it's 5 total. And, you got like, you know, they kind of, fit in, they kind of like slot into like these kind of sort of cliche territories, but they're actually pretty well written. But you know, you've got your dude that's like serious, but you know, if you keep at it, then he opens up a lot more, and then you know things like that. But if you don't do the work early with this guy, then he just kind of stays cold to you for the whole game. There's a sports guy who's like, I forget where he's from, but he learned English in New Zealand or something like that. So he's kind of like, and he's a rugby guy. So, you know, he's an overly enthusiastic sort of jockey type, but he's, you know, it's more the enthusiasm, and he's very easy to get along with. And, then of course there is the video game nerd guy who you meet, when you, volunteer to wash dishes for the first time.
The hero and of the story, I presume.
The hero of the the hero of the story, which, gets into territory that annoys me. It's when people in video games refer to video games that don't exist, but are very clearly based on like Zelda or whatever. Like, yeah, they have these conversations about, cause, Melissa is also kind of a gamer. Like, gaming is one of the activities you can pick for, and more about the activities in a bit. But yeah, in the first conversation with Shoji, I think his name is, you can bring up his video game hoodie and then talk about how great this game is. And it's, you know, then you get the experience of two people talking about a video game that you've never played, which is, of course, extremely annoying. I don't recommend anyone ever do it. Never listen to two people talk about a video game you've never played. Anyways, and then there is there's the guy who's not the student. He's the nephew of one of the teachers, and he like is Interestingly, has a prosthetic like forearm and hand. So they've got a character with a prosthetic in the game, which is kind of cool. And then there's actually a female character. So if you choose, you can romance a lady, and that's very good. And of course, that's what I went for. But
Aki would be so proud of you.
Yeah. Well, each of the guys, I was like,
fucking yeah.
Then the lady, I was like, okay, this will work. But
oh snap! Vertically impaired with the 37-month resub on Twitch, Tony. Thank you so much. Although it doesn't look like my sub points goal thing at the bottom is actually, so I'll have to fix that. But yeah, thank you, Tony.
Yeah.
And C14 dating, as Angerth said, you sunk my battleship.
Okay, so the
can
way
you
that
romance
the game goes,
cyborgs.
Can you? Well, I didn't unlock that content. If that's in there, there's a lot of content. So, and we'll get to it. So yeah, you get the overarching story, which honestly, not a whole lot happens. It's mostly to do with like just a kind of day to day sort of slice of life. It's more about the relationships than like, you know, nobody gets murdered and you have to find out who, or, you know, people don't start turning into dragons or anything like that. There's no, like in the amount that I played, there was no less than 3 full conversations about compacted poop in the, you know, fossilized earth. So,
okay.
Like it stays focused on like the fact that it's about archaeology and stuff. In fact, you can learn a lot, you know, some stuff about archaeology. They even give you a dictionary. So and you might need it because there's some $50 words in this game novel thing. So basically every day starts off with like, you know, your storyline and stuff like that. And you basically choose the activities for Melissa to do throughout the day, for, you know, basically 3 per day. So like, you know, morning, noon and night kind of deal. And, you know, so you get your planner set up and each activity corresponds to a different stat. So there's stats in this game. And each stat, like, you know, studying will raise your diligence, gaming will, you know, raise something or other, and you know, socializing will, or playing sports will like raise your socializing. Sometimes you'll get 2, and then if you search, those all raise like, you know, your stats, but they also raise your stress. There's a stress level too, and stress kind of affects everything in like a negative way, as per real life. But if you choose to surf the internet as your activity, then that just reduces stress and improves nothing else in your life. Which is great.
Fucking yeah!
Oh, shit. Again, Vertically Impaired just dropped 5 gift subs.
Captain Overachiever over here.
Holy shit, yeah. Tony. Thank you so much, man.
You must really like C14.
Fucking yeah!
We're going to hear Purnell going fucking yeah for the next minute.
But for reals, thank you, Vertically Impaired, for all the all the
many
subs.
Thanks, really appreciate it. Let's see.
Fucking yeah, fucking yeah, thanks.
It's real Purnell,
and he said it at the same time as digital Purnell. The timing was beautiful.
Fucking yeah,
stereo.
Fucking yeah. So yeah. Anyway, C14.
Yeah.
Thank you, Tony. You are the best.
So the stats basically, like, you know,
fucking yeah,
stats beget more stats. So like, you know, as you get better at certain things, then you get like, if you choose the activity, there's no guarantee that you'll succeed at it. So you could try to study, but you'll fail, and then you'll actually lose a point in that stat rather than gain. So it's kind of a thing of like figuring out, because every potential romantic partner corresponds to a stat. So if you can focus on like kind of raising one stat, that will improve your chances with that one person. And of course, you also improve that through dialogue choices and things like that. And the cool thing is, it does have a rewind feature where you can rewind and redo a choice if you didn't like the way things went after you chose one thing. So, and you know, you can kind of be nice to everybody and have everybody be your friend, of course. You can check the There's a kind of love journal tab where you can actually see, like, represented by hearts, like who you're impressing the most. And of course, like I said, as that goes up for a certain character, then you end up with more content based on that character. It actually gets pretty complex for, you know, this kind of visual novel. And then, yeah, like I said, you can also choose what kind of work you're going to do that day. And there's like, basically, you can either go to the dig or you can go to the lab. And those actually have mini games that are associated with them. Now, the mini games are toggleable. You can turn them off and just enjoy the novel if you prefer. And by the same token, you know, the stats thing, you can kind of ignore it and still get, you know, the story that you kind of want out of it. But it's still, it makes, again, it all, you're rewarded with basically more and better content. And, but yeah, the mini games. So it depends on which work you choose to do. And, you know, each job, of course, also corresponds, you know, that puts you in the area of, you know, these potential life partners that you meet in college. And so, you know, if you choose to, like, do the dig, you know, that gets your two characters there. And if you choose to do the lab, that gets you two more characters, potentially three, just depending on where in the story you are. And I think anyway, but so the mini games for the dig are actually just straight up Picross. You're supposed to, you know, basically dig out little perfectly square chunks of earth that happen to have the, you know, the numbers on the top and the side. That of course is my favorite because I actually like Picross, and it's kind of nice because, unlike standard Picross, you're not actually making a picture. You just have to know which squares to dig out. And, you know, it's just straight up doing kind of math. The other one's a little bit more guesswork. So it's where you're cleaning the stuff that gets dug out. And, you know, you basically have five tools on the sidebar. And it'll be like, you need 25 points to clean this. And if you choose one tool, it will tell you how many points that tool adds. And then you have to guess for the rest. But they are aligned where pretty consistently. It's like, you know, you got toothpicks, toothbrush, some wider sticks and a cloth and a bucket. And the bucket is always the most points, and it goes down from there in that order, you know, in the order, reverse order from what I just said. The game makes it actually pretty easy to figure this out. And but if you go over, you break the piece, and then, you know, you that's not good if you do that too many times. If you,
that's a shitty archaeologist to be breaking everything.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's,
guys,
it's
I found another bone. Snap. Oops.
Yeah. I'm going to scrub it with toothpicks. Ah, man. Not again.
Sorry, guys. I had a crazy date last night. Oh, I'm so distracted.
Yeah, exactly. We played Picross all night. It was crazy. And, anyways, so, yeah, if you break the pieces, that's not good. And of course, if you completely nail it, then you're, you know, that's great. And, if you get within 3 points without going over, then that's considered a success. So, you know, it's not hard, but it involves like kind of guesswork and like kind of guesstimating. And I much prefer the Picross thing, even though the person I was going for was in no way related to that work. But, you know, whatever. I still did it, and like I had the most hearts with the girl. So it's like, again, you can still manipulate the game to kind of get the way you want it. And so yeah, that's pretty much it. I mean, it's basically, yeah, building the stats, making your plans, reading through a story that, like I said, mostly just, you know, stays at the archaeological site and, you know, just involves like, and of course, you know, there's like socialization scenes, like parties and stuff like that. And again, just depending on who you're kind of going for, like that alters things in the story, like in pretty, like, you know, pretty good ways. But, you know, no, it's kind of like the thing where you're not going to like miss out if you just go for one person or something like that. It doesn't alter the game super dramatically, but it is one of those where it's written well enough that I think that you would actually want to go through it at least 2 or 3 times, you know, kind of pick your favorites and, you know, go down from there. So it's a really good time and lengthy. It's, I wasn't able to knock it out in one day. That's for sure. So that's,
which is a change from some rad-like, visual novels.
Yeah, I mean, except for the price. Like, I figured that it would be a little longer based on the price. But if you would have just handed it to me and said, this is a Radalaika visual novel, I would have been like, oh, this is actually a lot more serious than, you know, the one where you're just the lady with the two dragon dudes.
Yeah, well, as you said, this one is a bit more pricey for a Radalaika game. It's priced at $20. So as it stands, $20, what do you say about C14 dating?
Well, I say that the content is there to get your $20 worth if you are a fan of the, you know, Otome style, you know, visual novel and stuff. Plenty to enjoy here. There's a couple of good mini games. You know, there's some stuff I didn't really touch on because I just didn't want to talk too much. and it's from the publisher of like Nicole, which also is kind of close to that $20 price range. So it's like, you know, it's. That's kind of consistent for that publisher, I think. So I'm going to go ahead and give it a highly recommended try it for pretty much everyone, except that for the folks that, you know, are interested in this one, I say the quality holds up of the writing and stuff, and you're going to really enjoy the characters. So go ahead and buy it if you are, you know, the fan of the genre.
Cool beans. All right. Yeah. Next up is Space Base Startopia, developed by Realmforge Studios, published by Calypso Media, released March 26th on Xbox One, Series X, PS4, PS5, and PC for $59.99. Space Base Startopia captivates with its original mixture of economic simulation and empire building strategy paired with classic RTS skirmishes and a good dose of humor. Cole, tell us about Space Base Startopia.
I have never in my life played a strategy like city building type of game that came with a motion sickness warning. Whoa, is it deserved? Really? Yeah, it full on warns you in the beginning it will cause motion sickness.
Huh.
And it does that because the base that you are building in is a cylinder. So everything about the floor plan layout is rounded off. And so as you move the camera around, it's really distorting, like the way it rotates the buildings and every, like the entire thing is just permanently at a slope because it's all a cylinder.
Yeah, I'm watching video of it and it looks like it could definitely get my stomach a churning.
There are people, and you would be one of them, that would be very fucked up. I was really surprised. I was not expecting that. I did watch the videos beforehand, and I caught on to the thing being a cylinder, but it didn't realize it would cause motion sickness quite like that. When I saw the warning in the beginning, I was like, oh, shit. So the game as a whole is, like I said, it's a strategy building simulator. Think of anything where you have to like, oh, you build housing units and you build med units and you build entertainment. It's along those lines, although it's all in space and it's all for aliens, which is just delightful. You have an AI guide and she fucking hates you. She really just thinks you're the dumbest thing to ever see the light of day. She cracks snarky comments just constantly about your gray matter and how, oh, humans think it's okay to chop down plants with a wild abandon, but the moment an AI kills one of you organic beings, it's all over for us. And like, she is just really, really pissed off that you exist. She doesn't think you're capable of anything. She will mock you about how long it takes. I was doing shit once I picked up and understood how to play. I was moving along quick, and even still she was just like, well, that still took twice as long as it should have, but half as long as I was expecting. And you're like, come the fuck on. There is no positive reinforcement here. The AI hates you. Now, speaking of once I caught on to how to play, the tutorial in this game, remember how that AI hates you? The tutorial doesn't teach you shit.
Oh, no.
The tutorial levels are basically like, hey, you're here and shit's bad and you need to fix it. Bye. And the whole time the AI is giving you grief, and the button combinations are some of the most convoluted controls I have ever seen in my life. Everything requires that you press LB and a face button, or RB and a face button. And it's like, I hate when that happens. I really, really hate it. I was constantly pushing face buttons and getting no reaction. Nothing happened. So I don't know and understand why all the controls require bumpers being pressed like a shift key. It's odd. And it takes a lot to get used to. In addition to that, the game doesn't tell you how to actually build anything or what you're supposed to do with it once it's built. It's very trial by fire. Good luck, because the AI is just going to shit on you no matter how well you think you're doing. And you're not going to do well. I think some of the earlier levels, every time I would figure out a control, I would just scrap it and start the whole level over again, so that I could at least go into it knowing that new control and be a little further ahead this time. Now, I understand the level of difficulty. I was playing on Cadet. There is easier difficulties. Hallelujah for that. And that is a plus. Thank you. But the game would give you a list of tasks. And it would say, for example, that you need to collect 10 food. Okay, but how? There's never anything that says, oh, by the way, if you press up on the D-pad, then you can go to the bio deck. So I just kept sitting there having met all my other goals and had no idea there was a bio deck where I had to go collect food. Nothing pops up. Nothing tells you. Nothing says that bio deck is there. It was just, I bumped the button on accident and found it. That is my biggest complaint here. Because this game could be so much more fun if it at least gave you a basic understanding of where things were. It gave me a factory. Hey, free factory. Never tells you how to build anything in it. Doesn't tell you how to get the materials you need to build things with. It's all just figure it out, you dumb fuck. I was a very dumb fuck.
Figure it out, you dumb fuck.
The game says it in the nicest way possible. Like I said, it's all about how empty your head is. But it could at least give you just a little more of a push.
No.
I will say, too, there is multiplayer. There's several different options. I really appreciate the way that the multiplayer is set up. You cannot just find somebody to play with or join somebody's game. You already need to know somebody who has the game to invite them in. Now, May number one, install it on her Xbox, send her an invite, make her play with me. She does not enjoy strategy games. Strategy games that don't tell you what the fuck to do, she enjoys.
I was going
to
say, I couldn't imagine your kids really being into this one.
She was not amused with me. But for what time I managed to hold her still and be like, help me out here, she was able to connect and we got into a game and it was fine.
There's no Pokemon in this, Mom.
Yeah. I do wish that there was something to help you just find somebody who could randomly play with. And then in that regard, hey, put that shit on Game Pass and woo, you know, watch it roll. But, I do at least appreciate that you can play the whole campaign cooperatively with friends. Maybe find you somebody who knows how the fuck you're supposed to harvest food right off the bat and you'll be doing all right. I was so confused. I was like, there's a map of like this whole ass ship and I'm stuck in this one tiny little square room and I don't understand why. Yeah. It just doesn't tell you that you can open a door and get more space. I didn't even realize those were doors. I just did it on accident. I was sitting there rolling in all the, 'cause you don't use you don't use any kind of currency, you use energy. And so the whole point is, like, you have your living quarters and you pick up trash and recycle the trash, and all these things are meant to be done to give you energy to build with. And then you build things that produce more energy, draws more aliens in, they do more things, which gives you more energy. It's a strategy game. That's what they do. It's the equivalent of earning some kind of currency or resource. And you can just open the door with the energy and build out. No fucking clue. I was on like the fourth mission before I realized I could do it. I was beating these damn levels stuck in this one tiny little room. I don't know. Anyway, once I figured it out, I had a great time. And I really liked it, and I'm looking forward to finishing it. And I don't know how hard those achievements are going to be. I didn't look. But I would like to get more of them. But, man, it could really benefit from a more solid tutorial.
Well, tutorial aside, $60 on Space-Based Startopia. What do you think?
That is a high price tag. I get it. I get why it has the high price tag. It looks wonderful. But that is a high price tag. I'm gonna roll with a try it. Because like I said, it's fun once you figure it out. But if somebody who plays a lot of these strategy games like I do struggled to get a footing, boy, I hate to imagine what it would be like for a noob.
No. All right. Well, next up is Narita Boy, developed by Studio Koba, published by Team 17, released March 30th on Xbox One, Switch, PS4, and Steam for $24.99. Also available as part of Xbox Game Pass. Become symphonic in Narita Boy, a radical action adventure as a legendary pixel hero is trapped as a mere echo within the digital kingdom. Flashback to the 80s, the creator, a genius of his time, creates a video game console called Narita One, with its flagship title being a game called Narita Boy. Purnell, tell us about this one.
So, Narita Boy resulted in some weird feelings here, because so the idea behind this game is that you are, it's kind of like the titular 80s game fantasy. You're a person in the real world who gets dragged into the computer world to save it from a malevolent force, and also somehow the game's creator is sort of a worshipped deity in the world, but his memories are kind of trapped and scattered. So your mission in order to rescue this computer world is to go forth and locate the multitude of temples scattered throughout the environment that house the creator's memories, and pretty much, you know, liberate them so that he can regain his knowledge and, I guess, help to, you know, absolve the threat that the world has in store, or that's taking place within the game world. And the way this is done is by way of progressing through a 2D adventure environment, adventure platform environment, to be more precise. You're Narita Boy. Your primary weapons are a sword, basically called the Techno Sword, which you get during the game, and also through some firearm attacks and some melee attacks, all of which are things you earn as you progress through the game. So combat will consist of you going from, like, you know, walking into an environment where enemies will pop up, usually by spawning. If it's a new enemy you've never seen before, they get a really cool intro by way of a diskette that features their name in, like, a nice image of them on it, like Lord Doom. And it's like, hey, it's cool, Lord Doom. And then the music will start to play. And, you get to engage in the combat mechanics at which to kill them. And once you've killed all the enemies that spawn, you'll be able to move on in the level itself. It's kind of nice in that regard, too, because I honestly personally felt like, even though at least later on you start to get more moves, but early on you don't get a ton, but it still feels snappy to fight because they give you a lot of different enemies to fight, like, quickly. Like, I never really found myself thinking, oh, man, this game really needs more enemy variety. They give you plenty. So it's kind of cool to be like, oh, new dude. Oh, wow, this guy blows up. Wow, this guy floats and summons things. Oh, there's a lot going on. So that stuff's fun. Combat's fun. The aesthetic environment, the aesthetic value of the game is fantastic. Each new environment is freaking awesome. Like, visually, this game is on peak point. Like, I love it. And the music is even kind of okay, too.
But I just got to say, turn off the CRT filter. And the game looks a lot better.
But the CRT filter is part of the joy. Like, I had to leave that on.
I hate CRT filters in games. I want to see the game. I don't want to see a blurred lines on the side and curved image. Like, just give me the fucking pixels. Let me see them.
Well, I mean, I'll admit in that regard, it's nice that they give you the option to turn it off, because if they didn't, then that would be like, ugh, nah. See, we realize I could turn this shit off, but I can't. But they get that too. It's like, hey, you can look at it for a while, but once you're tired of the aesthetic, here's the graphics on the console you paid for. So it's kind of good that's there. But I've always been kind of CRT guy. Even with fight rate, I turn CRT mode on just for the lols of it.
You freak.
And in that game, they even, you're damn right. But like in that game, they even get like the TV border too. So they go ham on that concept. But we're talking about Narita Boy, also by Fight and Rage. So with Narita Boy, they do a great job of carrying all the aesthetics over from the 80s concept and graphically, musically, and everything. But there are a few gripes I had. Not a ton, but there's still enough where it's like I should mention them, because I think they carry a very fair bit of weight on if you'll enjoy this game or you want to try it. And they are as follows. So I'm the type of guy who doesn't always need to, I guess, say, follow a narrative that the game has made for it in order to get enjoyment out of it, as long as the combat's fun and all that. But in this game, there's an especially added element to that concern where it may not necessarily be as true as it usually would be, because this game is drenched in the atmosphere that they created. The world that you're in, the lore that's created for the world is all technobabble. Everything's technobabble. To the point where you might need to go backtrack to a location, but you can't remember the name of the location because it was technobabble. It's not a name that rolls off the tongue. Instead, it's something more donkulous, like, you know, Fetus Boy's, you know, Chamber McGub or something. Like, I don't freaking know. Where is it? I don't know. But you have to go back there. You got to find it. So you have a lot of trouble remembering that kind of stuff. But in addition to that, it's even just the general narrative. Like, you come up, like, think of it like this. Let's do something simple. Think of it like just a generic Mario RPG game, right? Even if you're not really following the lore, you'll go to a castle and there will be a character who says, hey, Mario, go to Plumber's Pit and rescue, you know, Luigi. He's trapped in a cage down there somewhere. And you're like, okay, I don't give a shit about Luigi. I don't care about, you know, plumbers. But I like the game I'm playing and I understand I got to go to Plumber's Pit. That's not too hard. I'll go there. I'll do what I got to do and move the game along. In this game, everything's technobabble to the point where, like, I found myself just being like, I don't even know what I'm supposed to be doing. I don't know what's going on. I don't know who I'm talking to or why I'm even going to talk to the guy, because everything is jargon. Now, with that said, if you're the type of person who's like, who lives off this shit, you're going to have a field day. Just try to ride that wave of, like, you know, just like jargon that, you know, like, oh, wow. Like, what, I guess the best way to describe it is, like, some people say, like, that's like a bad thing about Star Wars, where it's like, it's just a bunch of jargon that they created just for Star Wars, you know, where you're like, well, if you can get into that lore, you're going to have a field day with this. But if you can't, you're just going to be rolling your eyes half the time. Like, can I just play the fucking game? This game has that in spades, and it was actually kind of annoying for me, and it kind of was irksome. But the second issue I had is, and I guess it kind of ties back to the first thing, is that there's a lot of backtracking you got to do to get to, like, you know, to trigger different events to progress to the game, which isn't always a bad thing. It's necessarily a bad thing because, again, the game looks beautiful. But good luck remembering where you need to go sometimes, because, again, you might not even know what the heck the place you're going to is called, or you might have trouble rerouting your mind to tell you, oh, I remember it was like two screens over, then the elevator took me down, and then over here and over to that. And unlike something like Metroid, there's no map. So you'd better be able to remember how to get back to where you wanted to go. Now, not to say that this game is as expansive as Metroid, but still, a map would have been kind of nice to go to say, oh, go back there.
Yeah, maps are always good.
Yes, they are. And this game lacks one, and you'll feel the hurt when you're trying to find a way to get back to the place to trigger an event to progress with the game. But those complaints aside, the gameplay itself, I believe, is a lot of fun. Like, I think it's a great time. I think with fighting enemies is a fun time. And due to the fact that, again, there's no live system, every death is a respawn where they say, rest in force, in some really cool, like, rocking way. So it's like, hey, I'm back in the action. You never really feel like you lost time. And you never feel like you're struggling. Which, for the record, for somebody, as a person who likes difficult games, I like difficult games that don't waste your time. You go with that mantra, like, make the battles as hard as you friggin' want, but let me jump right back in. If I fail,
don't make me die and then give me a minute long load screen, right?
And then, yeah, and then make me run like 10 minutes to get back to the fight to try it again. Like, just let me start at the fight. You know, yeah, I can get there. Human. I've done it before. too human. Listen to them. Like, I get it with Dark Souls sometimes, but when it comes to like a lot of games trying to have that whole element, like, nah, I don't need to run all the way back. I already know I can get there. I need to practice on the boss. Even starting with the same amount of health. There you go. There's your trigger. Either let me try again with the same health I got there with, or let me respawn at the save point and try to get back with more health. That covers both bases, I think, personally. It covers all the do. You know, get there with enough resources, earn your battle stats, or let me retry with what I got there with. I'm sure I could do it. At least let me learn the freaking patterns and then get back there with full health and then beat his ass. But I digress. This game is great for respawning and retries. So, it's honestly, I think it's a great time to play. It's just, if you're going to give this game a try, just know you might find yourself rolling your eyes more than a few times. Oh, one thing I forgot to mention, the creator's memories. That's actually a big element to the game, because every time you find one to trigger, you know, further progress in the game proper, you're actually exposed to the actual memory. So you walk through the memory, and the creator will talk, not verbally, of course, it's through text boxes, like about, hey, this is what my life was like back at this point in my life. It was in this stage of my life. It's really nice. It's my father, my mother, you know, my grandparent. I grew up in this town. And it seems like it would be kind of like, you know, kind of meh, but it's actually really endearing. Like, I actually looked forward to finding each of the creator's memories. That was probably the best aspect of the game from a narrative perspective to me. So just wanted to put that in there too, let people know that it's not all techno babble. Sometimes you get some nice stuff too.
Narita Boy, as it stands, it is $24.99. What do you think of that?
I think if they try it, and if it's on Game Pass, you have access to that, you have no excuse not to try it, because I think you'll at least have enough fun with the combat to get past the stuff I didn't like, especially if it's free. But I think it's still at least worth a try in the event that you aren't going to pay cash for it.
Cool. So go get Game Pass.
Dun, dun, dun. Sell that shit.
The greatest deal in gaming.
God damn right it is. Right, Cole? She's gone. She gave up. She's like,
fucking yeah. I'm going to say this is a recorded version of Cole, too.
Fucking yeah.
Yeah, I thought you were going to play a clip of Cole.
No,
yeah.
I don't have a clip of Cole.
I'm not that loved.
No, I have this one, though.
Listen here, fuck snort.
The clip of Cole is just going to be, play Ori, damn it.
I hope that played. I hope that went over the
screen. I heard it, yeah. I didn't need to just hear what it was.
All right, we got to move on. Next game to talk about is called Core Defense, developed and published by Empera, released July 2020 on Steam for $9.99, a roguelike tower defense game with a dash of deck building. Choose a reward, improve your build, survive the next wave, repeat. Highly replayable, difficult, and addictive. You'll want just one more wave, just one more run. Chris, tell us about Core Defense.
I need it. No.
Okay, listen here, fuck snort.
Core Defense is a tower defense game, which kind of like, so the last few tower defense games I reviewed were like pretty basic tower defense games, but like they had some kind of like wild gimmick or like some new perspective or like, you know, some gameplay thing. This is not the case. This is straight up like as tower defensey as tower defense gets. You start off with a grid and you place a core, and the core, of course, is your home base. It's the tower, what you're defending. And you also get a one weapon to defend it. And, you know, even those are actually drawn randomly kind of thing. Like you draw every single time a wave happens, a wave of enemies, the game will draw out three cards, and those are random. So that is kind of the random aspect of this game. Now, the what the cards are is is what really makes the game, because some of them are, well, for one, you also start off with walls, and the walls are where you have to mount your thing. So you can't just put them anywhere on the grid. You have to set a wall first, and you have to collect walls through gameplay. And, you know, you might draw them randomly and, you know, et cetera. But, and you can actually stack them up too, which I'm not exactly sure what the use of that is yet. But anyways, so you set your core and you set your guy, and, you know, it defeats like a small enemy or something like that. And you, then it draws three cards, and like, you might get another gun, another type of weapon. You might get an upgrade to your existing weapon. You might get an upgrade to the core. The core actually can stack up all kinds of upgrades that change the entire nature of like the gameplay and stuff. Sometimes, and they're, you have standard upgrades, and then if they are outlined in yellow, they're rare upgrades, and those tend to be a little bit nicer. And because like there's a certain amount that you can upgrade each unit, and you know, you might draw a rare card that allows that cap to be like raised a little bit so that you can have like these really nice units. And this is the kind of game where it actually it doesn't necessarily pay to just throw out as many weapons as you can. Sometimes it pays more to just upgrade the ones you have. Obviously, you're going to want more than that one that you have. But, you know, you don't need to fill up the entire, you know, screen with that. And so, yeah, it becomes like really, yeah, you start to get into like, you know, this mode of like, not only are you planning your defense, but you're also kind of excited to see what comes up, what gets drawn. And that's where the game, like, it's actually really intriguing. And, you know, and it is difficult. You get the first like, well, it has 50 waves to begin with, and I think every 10 waves is a boss fight. It could be 5 or something, but anyways, the boss fights are just slightly harder than the other ones, but they do ramp up in difficulty. But, you know, like the first 10 or so are just kind of a gimme. So it actually is kind of cool to, you know, play around with different things. But of course, once you learn it and get serious, and you know, start, really utilizing some strategy there. And, so the other cool thing is though, that, you know, of course, if your core gets blown up, it's game over. If, you know, the enemy penetrates all of your defenses and gets to the core, then it blows up and you got to start again. When you do, it actually, depending on how far you got, it adds points to a system that, you know, every 1,000 or so points, it unlocks something completely new that gets added to the deck, as it were, to like to pull out. So yeah, you can end up like with something akin to like, you know, your core, and then you have like, you know, some melters which shoot lasers. You could have like a Vulcan cannon which shoots in only one of the four directions, but it's like really powerful, and you can put that behind your core. And then you can end up with repeaters, which are, you know, kind of like your machine guns. And you can like put a healer in there, which will heal your you know, everybody in range and all this other stuff. And the other cool thing is that, like, you know, as you go along, like, depending on how you upgrade, you could set it to where you can skip upgrades and in exchange get a really massive healing bonus. And that'll help your, you know, if you feel like your defenses are pretty appropriate, but you maybe have taken some damage, then you can do a skip plus and, like, you know, get something that way. So, yeah, and, you know, like I said, the graphics are just like little pictures of guns that you set on a grid. You know, it's graphically nothing impressive, but really, you know, this is definitely like one of the better defense games that I've played, like just purely gameplay wise. The other thing is that if you really want to dig in, the game has like a full encyclopedia of like all the stuff. You can get stats for everything. You can like look at, you know, once a game ends, you can look at like all the statistics for like what you did. And, you know, if you're the kind that really likes to get into the, like the numbers and nitty gritty of like this kind of game, then this one absolutely allows for it. So but as it stands, you know, it's not going to I don't know if it's going to win like any graphics awards, but everything else is pretty solid on this.
I'm seeing on Steam, a lot of people aren't too happy with how the DLC was released. A lot of people are saying that like some core features of the game are being withheld as DLC. Have you looked into the DLC at all? Do you have any comments on that?
Yeah, unfortunately, I just jumped into the game and started playing it, so I'm not exactly sure. But yeah, I now that you've mentioned it, I do see that like it's gotten some like negative reviews here lately. I'm not sure what core mechanic is missing. It seemed perfectly playable to me, but you know, I guess I'm gonna have to, you know, I guess buyer beware. You know, read the reviews and see what's missing there.
Looks like there's 10 more difficulties from Overlord 21 to 30. There's new achievements, wave preview. You can see which mobs will spawn in the next wave. You'll experience, I guess, mastery progression is a big thing that people are upset isn't in the main game, where you actually level up and gain mastery points.
I didn't gain any levels. I just, yeah, as so it I looks got like points,
that might be the big things. Thing that people are pissed about.
That would have been nice.
Well, it stands for $10, the base game, what do you think of Core Defense?
Well, I guess the missing content notwithstanding, I had a lot of fun with it, and I was actually playing it while everybody else is doing their reviews. So yeah, I'd say it's a it's a buy it. You know, I guess just, you know, read the reviews and see what you think. But I personally really quite liked it. And, you know, like I said, I'm a little wary of tower defense games usually. And it's usually because of like the gimmicks and like the, you know, all that kind of, you know, way of doing things that I think everybody goes for nowadays. But this one kind of brings it back to basics. And I like that. So.
Cool. All right. Well, next up is Black Legend, developed and published by Warcave, released March 25th on Xbox One, Switch, PS4, and PC for $29.99. A dark, immersive, turn-based strategy RPG, master the art of the 17th century alchemy to liberate a doomed city from a bloodthirsty cult of the great alchemist Mephisto. Purnell is our legend, so tell us about Black Legend.
Well, yeah. Oh, yeah, but the game. So the way this game works is that you are kind of dropped into this town. I believe it's called like Grand or something. And you are kind of tasked initially with just like crafting a generic character, like as a main character for yourself. And then from there, the game will also just kind of randomly generate three other characters to go with you. You become a team of four mercenaries, and you are entering this town with the goal being to liberate it from a cultist group, partly by just defeating the cultists, but also by removing this hazy fog that has kind of consumed the town, resulting in various phenomena, including, you know, like death and madness and just general, like, just weird shit. Anyway, so the way this ends up happening is like once you go into the town proper, the entire game itself is you exploring the town. It's a fairly large town. And it's broken up by different districts and sectors within the town, navigated by a compass that's at the top of the screen and various signposts that you can find as you explore. Like you may come across one that says, go west from here to go to the Merchants Guild, or go north to go to the Harbor District. So then you use your compass while you run around the town. Bada bing, bada boom, you found the locale. As you're running around the town, though, various enemy types, including like just wild animals and cultists and whatnot, will occasionally be patrolling zones. And if they happen to spot you by way of actual like vision, like, you know, vision gauges or whatever, you'll trigger combat. The combat in this game is basically turn-based strategy RPG. So when they get spotted, you'll get dumped into a battle in the zone of which you were spotted in. And also, depending on where you were spotted at, that determines where you're able to place your units to begin as a battle sequence. Once you've selected the characters that go into the combat zone, you are then able to go, and it's based off of like character agility stats or whatever, determine who goes first versus second, third, fourth, whatever. One thing I like about this game is that they divide your actions between movement points and action points. So you aren't like some games, it'll be like a combined pool where if you walk, then you might not be able to attack because you use up too many AP points. Whereas in this game, they are completely separate from each other. So you can, if you happen to stand next to a guy you're not really going to get much of a benefit from that, because even if you use all of your attacks, if you can still run away, by that same token, you can move into a guy, do some damage with all the attack points you got available, and then if you have enough movement left, move to a place where you might have a better place of defending yourself. So I do like that. The one thing about this battle system that gives me mixed feelings, though, is the alchemy system. So it's like typical battles otherwise. You know, you have your various melee attacks and your ranged attacks you can select, and they all have different APs, also healing skills. However, many of the skills you get have a sub-trait related to alchemy. And there are four different, classifications you can fall under. I don't even remember all four names because I hate the damn names. It's like Albedo and like Necredo, whatever. They mentioned colors related to them, but the colors barely play into it. They're like, I'll go into that in a second, I guess. So let's say, for example, I use a Necredo attack on an enemy. He'll take damage, but in addition, he'll get a Necredo marker on his health gauge in one of the four corners of that gauge. Each of those four types of elements reside in a specific corner. So it doesn't go in like a random place. Like Necrodo will always be on the lower left. You know, Albedo will always be on the upper right, that sort of thing. Now, your basic attack that every character gets for their class or whatever is referred to as a catalyzing attack. Now, the way this works is if you've stacked different elements or enough of combinations of elements onto an enemy and they use a catalyzing attack, you'll do additional, sometimes massive damage because it triggers essentially a chain reaction. The catalyst introduced into a volatile environment, being all the alchemy elements, causes a chain reaction and kaboom, damage. The problem with this is as follows, though. One, just like I mentioned, no one remembers what these stupid names are. Like, it's annoying. The second thing is that they do mention in the tutorial, they refer to them as colors. However, when you're going through all your attacks in your menu, they don't say the colors, they say the names. So you might be like, okay, I already hit them with which one? Grado, Necrodo, Bumbado. I don't freaking know what I hit them with. I hit them with one of them. Now I want to hit them with the corresponding opposing element so I can get the combination to do the catalyzing strike. And what ends up happening is like you almost never intentionally set up a chain reaction. What I've been doing for most of my time playing the friggin' game is I try to use a variety of different attacks. And then when I'm ready, I think I'm ready to do a catalyzing attack because I can see the points in the corners. I will then go to my catalyzing strike attack and then look at the potential damage gauge to see if catalyzing shows up. And if it doesn't, like, okay, I'm going to hit him. He's going to get damaged. That's good. And I go with it. But aside from that, for me personally, it's rolling the dice. Not to say other people won't have better luck with that. I'm just saying that I suck at remembering these stupid names that are just there for the sake of flavor text. It didn't need to be that way, guys. It could have been better. But with that said, though, the concept of that is pretty cool. I like the idea of wanting to have characters with specific attacks, not because those attacks do tons of damage by themselves, but because you know you can sync them up with other team members' attacks and then nail that catalyst attack and drop dudes like flies. Because it's very important. If you're not pulling that off, you will get your ass handed to you in a number of these fights because the enemies are jerks in this game. They can hit you pretty hard if you just kind of let them roll. Furthermore, inspired by the fact that you don't even heal after battles. When a battle's over, no healing is done. There's no end. You can't go to the end and heal yourself. You only heal by using skills in battle or by using disposable items. And money doesn't grow on trees either, so you're not going to want to drop 500 coins on a healing potion, considering that it took you like three battles to even earn 500 gold. Jeez. And you probably had to spend one of them in the battle. So get used to using first aid and getting smart with those combination attacks. The other thing I like about this game, though, admittedly, is how the class system works, which is that you start out with a few classes, but new classes are introduced when you find appropriate equipment in exploration. So, for example, I was running around. I fought some dudes on the dock. I could have avoided them, but I was like, I want the experience. And maybe there's also something cool on the dock. Why would they be guarding a dock? And sure enough, I opened a chest, gave me a halberd and a dagger, a specific type of dagger. And then those two things unlocked new classes. So I was like, yeah, buddy. And with classes in this game, skills are learned, one, by the class itself. And two, like mostly the passive skills, but the primarily skills are learned by equipment, kind of like how Final Fantasy IX did it, which was a system I loved, which is that the skill is attached to the piece of equipment. So if you equip the skill, the weapon to the person, they now have access to the skill. If you use the skill enough times in combat, or in the case of passives, just have the skill equipped for enough battles in combat, the skill becomes permanently attached to that character, regardless of whether they have the weapon equipped or not. So it incentivizes you to kind of switch around equipment a lot and just kind of make custom character builds. In addition to that, all the character classes in this game influence your character stat growth. So if you want a guy that has, you know, high defense, you might want to use the Lanchnik, you know, because his stat growth influences high, you know, defense. Whereas if you want a guy that's fast but has a glass cannon, maybe make a guy primarily run around as a rogue. And, of course, that means he'll be fast, but he won't be able to take much damage, that sort of thing. Now, the downside to this, in my opinion, of course, is the fact that, one, you got AP. People like myself were like, shit, I don't know what character class I should use. I don't want my stats to get poorly developed. What am I going to do? Blah, 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 blah. And the other thing is that since they constantly incentivize you to switch classes so you can keep your stats builds, you know, balanced, and also so you can keep guys equipped with new and varied attacks, you're going to be in the menus a lot. And to me, the worst part of this entire game is the damn menu system. It is so damn janky. Thankfully, this is something that they can fix by patching it. Please patch the menus. They are awful. They are awful, man. Like, I don't know how to properly describe it. Like, to go through your characters, when you're in the menu screen, you have to press X to cycle through your characters. You can't just push up and down. No, you got to actually do that. Like, logically, you would think you'd scroll through your characters, pick a character, and then go through their inventory and choose what you want to equip them with. Like every other RPG in existence. Yet for some reason, this game is X to cycle through your people, and you're always scrolling through your equipment to choose it. But then the problem there sometimes is that when you have if you're like hovering over like a weapon that someone's equipped with, it'll have a big box below the weapon, and it blocks all the shit that they have equipped below where the weapon is. So you can't see anything. Also, if a weapon teaches you skills, it just has a bunch of stupid symbols, but you can't say click on it and be told what the skills are. It's just, well, circle with slash gets thing with dead rabbit. Whatever. I don't know what the fuck that stuff means. Maybe I'll click on it. You click on it and nothing happens. It's just click, click, click. And you can even see the emphasis being placed on the icon, but nothing happens. Like, it's ridiculous. Like, for something so small to be such a huge hurdle for a game that's honestly, in my opinion, a cool concept, it's irksome to me. Like, fix that. You have the power to fix the menus. I know you can. Please do that. And while you're at it, this might have been a problem that I had because it happened during a battle where an enemy used a specific fog attack, but there's also the occasional weirdness of hit detection or movement detection where, like, I would end up on, like, one battle I was in, I retreated up a set of stairs and stopped my character on the stairwell. From that point on, when I tried to use that character to move, they couldn't leave that spot. Every place around the stair was out of range. They weren't being blocked by enemies. They weren't being blocked by my people. They just couldn't move from that spot. I don't know why that was. It was ridiculous and annoying. But maybe it was because of the debilitating fog that was at the bottom of the stairs. But it shouldn't have affected the top of the stairs or one step to the left or right of the guy. But I don't friggin' know. It annoyed the tar out of me, though. And it was like, ugh.
But, thick fog. Can't see next to you.
You ain't friggin' lying. Or walk through it? Come on. Like, it's not even poisonous fog. It's just fog. But those are, like, just general annoyances that I had with the game. In some respects, big annoyances, because those are two things that they needed to look into. But I feel that if they can get that under wraps, this is a game that could be fun to play through. Like, I think the game is also, I should be able to click on a guy on the map. Like, if I'm, like, scrolling through my characters in battle, on the field, I should be able to hover my icon over a guy, hit the A button, and see what their attacks and stuff are. Simple. Simple as that. I should be able to look at any character on the map whenever I want and see what their stats are. What is this guy equipped with? What skills does he have? Do I need to rearrange his study to prepare for what he's going to be able to do? Can't do that. If you hover over a guy, all you see is their name, their attack, their total action points, their total movement points, and the symbol for their class. That's all you, also their hit point total. That's all you get. I cannot look at all their freaking skills and stuff, and it's annoying as balls to me because I should be able to freaking do that. It just makes friggin' sense. Why can't you do that? Simple things. You can fix this guy. Do it.
Well, sounds like the game has a lot of potential, but a decent number of issues holding it back. At $30, what do you think of Black Legend?
I want to say for now, I'd give it a wait and see for either a discount or some patches to come through. But if they can give it the kind of love that it deserves to kind of fine-tune and finesse it, I think this one could easily be upgraded to a buy.
Well, sounds good.
Well, it can be.
All right. Well, we got one final game to talk about tonight that is called Tetra Cube, developed and published by Dedal, released March 20th on Steam for $6.99. Tetra Cube is a turn-based strategy roguelike game. Nay and Dio are hunters. They solve various events in the universe. The Alpha Centauri Science Institute, Nay and Dio are dispatched to information that an unknown cube caused a disaster. What? Nay and Dio are dispatched.
What would this mean?
Nay and Dio are dispatched to information that an unknown cube caused a disaster. All right, whatever. Whether you can't beat the cube is up to you. Well, I would assume that you will beat the cube, but Chris, tell us about Tetra Cube.
Well, if you can't, then it's up to you. So, okay, so yes, this, that description notwithstanding, this is a... an interesting one. This is a roguelike that is also like kind of a, you know, a strategy RPG, which while we do have like grid based movement type of, you know, that like goes all the way back to like the Mystery Dungeon style games where you move on a grid and then the enemy moves and stuff. This one acts a lot more like a Final Fantasy Tactics type game than, you know, a classic roguelike. You start the game and yeah, you have these two characters. Those are basically your characters for the whole game. Apart from one thing, which I'll get to, but yeah, they're one of them's named Dio and the other one's named Nay. I feel like if you combine their names, Dio Nay, DNA might be maybe what they were going for. I don't know. But that's kind of what I was thinking. One of them is a human that that like basically does all the attacking, and the other one is kind of an android type character that does all the healing. So you've got, you know, basically one character that can deal damage and the other one can't. So it's a pretty interesting dynamic there. Now there is something that that Nay can also do, which is she can hack an enemy bot if like her, you know, if the stats line up correctly, and then that will get you one more companion, which is a bot, until it blows up. everybody's got like this set amount of lives. They're just represented by little, like, you know, kind of Ninja Gaiden style blocks, you know, just health blocks or whatever. Very not into the numbers this game. So it's kind of interesting, like, so the way it goes, like, it's kind of randomly generated, I guess, but like there's also consistencies between each run. So like the first floor always has you running into the same people who kind of explain the thing about the cubes, and I don't know how to explain the thing about the cubes. It's just a bad guy that you got to go fight, and it's a cool looking cube. But yeah, you're on a space station with a bunch of research scientists and stuff, and they kind of explain things as you go. That's kind of like your, and you also have an optional tutorial that you can do that, that gives you a little bit of storyline as well. But yeah, it's really about like making your way through the rooms, trying to clear them, and then, taking the elevator down to the next floor. Now there's a little bit of a twist here in that, Nay, suffers an injury during the tutorial storyline where, her, like, I don't know, like her super awesome android battery, whatever, gets knocked out and, you know, is broken, and therefore she has to rely on standard batteries, which have to be changed constantly. And they tell you in the game that if you can make it to the sixth floor, then you can get that battery fixed, and then that will actually allow you to move freely as you did in the tutorial stage. Because the way that the game works is that you get put into a room, which is, you know, a grid. We usually has some kind of sometimes they'll have like boxes of ammo. Sometimes they'll have just furniture. Sometimes they'll have research scientists. Sometimes they will have, of course, enemies. And the idea is to, like I said, defeat the enemies if they're there, because otherwise the doors are locked. But every time you move rooms, you lose a battery. And you start off with, I think, 19 batteries. So according to the game, the way that you get more batteries is to help research scientists if they're in trouble. So I guess if they're getting attacked by enemies, you can save them and they'll give you batteries. I have not once been able to do that. These scientists are made of wet paper, and and they're always on the complete other side of the room getting attacked by like three enemies at once. And by the time I get over there, they're just a pile of goo. And so but you know, you can get through a floor with just the base batteries without refilling them. But I would really like if the game was a little more helpful in telling you exactly what to do, because they also say that you can do like quests and stuff, but no matter how much I click on somebody, it doesn't initiate anything. And again, all of the options are just pictures. And there's not very many of them. So I've not seen a talk button, you know? So maybe that was just me, but I feel like maybe the game is not communicating to me what I need to, an aspect of it that, you know, I need to know. Having said, basically the way the combat works is that you move Dio. You can move her right next to the enemy for a melee attack, which will take away one block of life initially. And she also gets ranged weapons that have limited ammo. And I mean limited, like two or three bullets. But I mean, considering that enemies have like between two and like four hit points initially, you know, that's pretty good. And then, of course, eventually you can find a 3D printer, which allows you to spend these collectible points to get upgrades. And, you know, that can get you more weapons and, you know, better ammo, things like that. However, using the 3D printer uses up batteries. So, again, you've got to, like, balance conserving the batteries that Nay has, you know, with whether you want to upgrade yourself or not. And yeah, trust me, going the conservative route is not suggested, because enemies get pretty hard pretty quick, and they can overwhelm you if you don't do any kind of upgrades. So again, I feel like if I would have known better how to refill my batteries, maybe it's just something that didn't show up in the roll every time I played. But I played quite a few games, and they all kind of ended up the same way. Hmm. Just getting, you know, getting overwhelmed fairly early on. And unlike the last game I was talking about, this game does not have any kind of, you know, there's nothing that you gain between playthroughs. Every time you just start completely fresh. So, yeah, there's not like a between games like upgrade or whatever. So, yeah, you know, it's, you know, it was made by apparently one person. So, Funko Pop knockoffs, I like it. Spend all your batteries on 3D printing Funko Pop knockoffs. I like
that. Is good advice by Angerth in chat.
If
someone out there wants to 3D print me a CM Punk Funko Pop, that would be amazing.
Neat. I don't know. Yeah, I don't even know how they work. So yeah, it's a game that like it's pretty ambitious in what it wants to do. It looks and sounds good. The characters on screen are like chibi anime characters. And in cutscenes the drawings are very nice. Apparently Didal was an illustrator before turning to solo game development. The soundtrack is by somebody named 5505. I don't know who that is, but it's a good soundtrack, so I recommend that for sure. But yeah, like the art's good, the music's good. You know, gameplay, I like it. I really like what they're going for here. It's just like, you know, a little bit more communication for how to restore those batteries that I seem to really need. And, you know, That would be nice. And also, you know, there's some clunkiness here. Like, for instance, when you move your character, you have to like click on them and then drag the mouse where they're going. There's no controller input, really. The controller, you can WASD or use a control pad to control just the camera to zoom in or out on the map, but not really rotate it too much. So there's a lot of things you end up not being able to see. And you have to like click a map button and then it brings up the map and then you can click on the next. Like, you can't just click on a door and go to the next room. You actually have to pull up the map and then double click on a blank space or backtrack. But don't backtrack in this game. You just waste batteries. Unless you really have to. But you know, it's like there's some
jankiness, but overall, yeah. It sounds like a pretty good game. So $6.99. What do you think of Tetracube?
I'm gonna give it a try. It. I'm gonna just say approach with caution for the things that I've mentioned. However, it's not very expensive, and it's a pretty good little game. And I actually think it. You know, I had fun with it. So again, I just need to know about that battery thing. And there's no guides available. There's just other reviews on Steam, basically. So trust me, I tried to research this.
Now, the beauty of a new release by a new developer that I saw the one review on Steam mentioned just a game launching into a sea of other games on Steam, and it's tough to get noticed. So,
oh yeah. Yeah. But I mean, yeah, if this one catches your eye, then I think that, you know, it might be worth your time. And hopefully, maybe, you know, again, solo developer, maybe they'll, you know, take some things and improve some things, or I don't know, maybe they'll block us all and go sue some YouTube channels. We never know.
Yay, Gilson.
Yay. This is definitely better than Annie Gilson B. Ponta's game. That's for sure.
That's not a high bar. Let's be fair.
No,
the bar's on the ground.
Yeah, the bar. We all tripped over the bar. Coming to the show today.
Yeah.
We just stumbled over it. That is it for this episode. Y'all motherfuckers go on way too long for just reviews.
Well, that's what we're here for.
It's 2 hours. We only had 8 games tonight. How is it two hours?
These are meaty products, sir.
Oh, my God.
Like on Thursday, I'll speedrun and be done in 45 minutes.
Yeah, last episode, episode 666, we're done in like a fucking hour 10.
Well, I mean, you had to get the devil come out the door trying to come and greet you. You didn't have time to talk.
Oh, man. Well, we're ending the show normally this episode. No Norg intro to end the show. We're going to play some actual music. So we're going to wrap up the show and play some music. Does anyone have any final words to end the show?
Play the games you buy, because if you don't, wasted your money. Play shit.